rapper cats.
Scary cats.
Wow.
Meow.
What show is this, Chandler?
Oh, well, hey, trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends.
You're too intense. I can't take your manliness.
I'm so excited. This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're broadcasting live from the back alleys of Babylon. We babysit the binary blip in your brain with a combination of badinage and technical tabulations, helping to sacralize your senses to the salacious songs of liberty. And we also wash your hands of government.
Ew.
So are you
That's
feeling
the name
it?
Of the show tonight. I'm feeling it. Yeah. Yep. It's yep, the yep, name yep. of the show is, since no one's feeling it, the name of the show is...
I am. I said I was feeling it, darn it.
Wash your hands. Yes. Randy's not feeling it.
Randy? I just finished washing my hair with Bipcot shampoo.
Did you notice? Yeah, because my wife came home from federal court the other day. No, she wasn't on trial for murder. She was, too soon. Come on, man. Stop with the murder. All right, so she was, she's a paralegal in her law firm, her three-person law firm, sometimes is in federal court, and she goes to court sometimes with the attorneys, and she just is particularly wrecked whenever she comes home from federal court, and she came home yesterday and, like, immediately washed her hands, and she said, I have to wash the federal government off my hands. And so the name of tonight's show is... wash the government off your hands with the Freedom Fiends. And the image is, the actual, like, little soap dispenser, like, pump bottle in our kitchen that she used, I put a Bipcot sticker on it. So that's the picture for tonight's show.
Awesome.
Randy, you ever in federal court, Randy? You don't even go to court, do you? You just go golf with the judge and work it all out, huh?
Yeah, I go to federal court, and it's pretty dreadful, yeah.
You need 3 showers afterwards, don't you?
Yeah. Federal court is very different than state court.
You know what they do here in federal court? When they take a break, they blast. I've never been. I've been told. They blast white noise over the PA system in the room so the jurors don't hear, like, any, you know, whispering between the client and the attorney.
Right.
Or anything.
They do that in state court, too. Yeah. Yeah, they do that a lot.
I think they should, like, blast purring, the sound of a cat purring.
Well, actually, if they just blasted out whatever was being said, it would be more interesting.
I think they should blast out Slayer.
If I were Slayer, I think if I had to be in federal court and I really didn't want to be on a jury, I would have a medical excuse to get out because I have tinnitus and I'm under the treatment of an ear, nose, and throat doctor for it. And I could get a note that's, because white noise I can't stand it. It's painful to me. So I could get a note, get out of jury duty. But you don't want to get out of jury duty. It's one thing you want to do. You know what's amazing? I heard someone say this, is how people who say, you have to vote or you're not a good American. Those are the same people that will work as hard as they can to get out of jury duty where you can actually make a difference.
isn't that funny, huh?
Yeah, but when you vote, there's not much. The pressure's really not on you because, after
it's
all, you know
me.
You're not going to change
I
anything.
I could go vote 100 you know, times for Hillary, and my state would still go for the guy with steak in his hair. Do you know that Wyoming is the
I bet there
state?
Is one person that there will is. Vote 100 times for Hillary in your state.
I saw dead. This map the yeah. other day that Stephen Kinsella posted that said that if only taxpayers could vote, this is what the electoral map would look like. And it was entirely red with 2 blue states.
No, you don't say.
And one of them was Washington State, like, which is kind of weird because it's mostly rural, but it's all those hipsters in Seattle listening to Nirvana thinking they got to make a difference by voting for Hillary.
That's interesting. It really is.
Although, you know what? I saw this thing today that's hilarious. Like, even the Republicans aren't happy with the choices this time. It's just coming out more and more. Like, between outlawing Kratom, we're trying to, and, like, everybody who likes Kratom and their life is bettered by it going, wait, the government can't just do that. No one voted on it. What? You know, like, everyone's going to become an anarchist, even and the Republicans, everyone except the Democrats. But so the Republicans are realizing, like, oh, wait, but, you know, this guy's horrible. So here's the funny thing I heard today. Like, I'm not one of these, you can fix politics from the inside kind of people. But I heard a Republican suggestion that was hilarious. It made me laugh and spit soda and kind of go A for effort for creativity, because, you know, I'm never impressed by people's attempts to change the system. But this one, I was impressed by the creativity and by the, like, it was so funny. It made me spit water on my brand new monitor. And it was this. So all the hardcore conservatives, you know, like the real conservatives, hate Trump. And they don't want him to be president, but they like Pence, the VP that he picked. So there's some people whose plan is to get Trump elected and then immediately impeach him.
Without grounds. That would Without be as grounds. Likely well, to happen. Have... That would be as likely as happened to have a president who was just elected to get a Nobel Prize.
Oh, wait. Oh, wait, yeah.
Well, yeah. they did mention that. I read that article. They did mention that they would have to come up with something. And
well, WikiLeaks would help them. WikiLeaks would become the Republican heroes, whereas they were all, like, you know, crying for hanging that guy for treason, even though he's not American, a few years ago. WikiLeaks could probably provide the proof it would take to impeach him once he's elected, like something maybe that they did to get him elected. Who knows? But anyway.
Worms.
Now, there's an interesting noodle scratcher about the electoral process. So if a ticket got elected and then it came out immediately, like, here's irrefutable proof that the presidential nominee who just became president absolutely personally participated in something fraudulent and illegal and immoral to get elected, could you impeach him but keep the vice president? Does anyone know about politics enough to know this, the electoral process?
You could only impeach him for something that he'd personally done.
Right.
Would the vice president then become president, or would you have another election? Would Hillary beat everyone up with her?
Well, no.
I'm going with the Hillary would beat everyone up. Actually, I think that's kind of what they're gearing towards. You know, like with the whole Mr. Trump, would you accept the results of the election?
5%. Turn down 5% there, sir. I think that's what that's about.
Well, interesting. I mean, think about it. Like, you get a disaffected populace, and you get, you know, one group of individuals warring against another. It seems to me like the deep state or the powers that be or whatever, they're just pushing for this. They want people to bicker and fight. And what better way to, you know, before the election, we're going to allow information to be released that points to corruption. And then after the election, I firmly believe Hillary will be selected. And, you know...
Excuse me.
After that, hey, she engaged in some illegal activity. You don't say. And then it just starts a big fight.
You know, it's the ironic thing, too. Like, if that happens and she kind of immediately suspends civil rights guaranteed under the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights, far more than, you know, the last four presidents have gutted things. Like, if she immediately does that, the liberals won't notice. Because it probably won't affect them directly. Or if it does, they'll be like, well, we got to do it for the nation.
You know? I really believe that's what'll happen. You know, I was on a thread. I got called a Trump supporter the other day, if you can actually believe that.
No, everybody on the Fiends has been called that except me, because I block everybody. You know what? Since I went public with my posts, are they still public? Because I've only banned one person since that happened. I thought I was going to be banning people left and right.
Your reputation precedes you.
I know.
That's exactly right.
This guy's insane, and he has cats. I'm going to stay away.
Yeah, but you know what?
Crazy cat lady alert.
You know what the argument these crazy liberals pull out is, like, the social contract, right? Because I got that pulled on me, and I kind of quoted Lysander Spooner's argument against the social contract, and I was told that was hyper-masculine BS. Of course,
what the heck is hyper-masculine?
Spooner? I don't know, but I can say, and I'm not being discriminatory, but the person who told me this is an avowed liberal feminist, so maybe Spooner, that has
well, Spooner,
something to
you
do
know
with
it's
it.
Funny, because it's ironic, because Spooner was kind of lefty for a anarchist.
He was an individualist anarchist. He leaned more left, I guess, but not. He was more individualist.
Which I associate with femininity more than masculinity.
Well,
I don't know, man. He gave the post office a run for their money.
Speaking of Venn diagrams, for people that, you know, think in two dimensions, but it's actually a sphere. It's actually three dimensional. I was wrong. So the other day,
my favorite segment.
I think it was Jeremy. I know it was Lisa. Lisa and I think Jeremy. We were talking about Renfair, right?
Yes. It was.
I started something and I didn't finish it. I didn't finish it. You know, that's a rule of radio. It's actually a rule of storytelling. Is you can hijack yourself as hard as you want, as long as you come back and finish it. I mean, there's a. You guys ever listen to Henry Rollins' spoken word stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah. A couple of them, yeah.
He's kind of lefty, but other than that, he's amazing. When he doesn't talk politics, when he's just talking about people and how they interact, he's amazing. And it's funny, though, because he's like, he's a guy who used to, like, when Black Flag would play in Southern California, like, all the time, the cops would show up, beat up the audience, and arrest the band. There's that, like, the picture on the cover of Henry Rollins's photo book autobiography is a picture of a marquee at a theater where they were playing, and it says, like, tonight, Black Flag and Circle Jerk, I don't know who it is, but somebody, and then and there's like 50 cops in riot gear, like, walking into the building. That's the cover of that was his life. So, but he's totally, like, loves the government and thinks that, you know, he actually said that, like, Ron Paul is a fascist and you gotta vote Democrat. But so anyway, he actually
Ron Paul
did this
is a
one
fascist?
Story.
Jeez.
Yeah,
man.
He actually did this one story that I heard him do where he told this thing and, like, went on these twists and turns. And when it was done with it, I was like, I usually love him. There was something wrong with this, even though it was great. And I listened again, and what I realized was he started a story and then didn't finish it. Like, he went on all these twists and turns.
Which is very odd for him, yeah, because I've seen him live a couple of times, and the guy does not stop talking and moving for 3 hours straight. And he'll start something, and like 20 minutes later, he'll finish
quite well enough, you know.
Yeah. I will say, though,
3 hours a night, and go on.
If you want to hear the best story he's ever told, it's on the album Human Butt, and it's called Donate Your Bodies to Science, You Fools, and it's about hanging out with the bum Paul in D.C. Old stuff.
I like that. I like that, but I also like Why Black Sabbath is Better Than a Woman.
Yes.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school, and this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Wow. Yeah. So, speaking of hijacking yourself, during the break, when we went to break, I said, you know, if I died right now, this would be the worst Fiends ever. And I didn't mean because, like, oh, that Fiends where Michael died. I mean from, like, a radio standpoint, and nobody knew why, and then Jeremy got it. Why would it have been great if horrible if I died during the break, Jeremy?
Because in the process of explaining why it's horrible to lead with something and then not finish it, you proceeded to lead with the fact that you were wrong about something and then moved on and never discussed what you were wrong about.
Yeah.
I thought it was
I wasn't really wrong. I was only wrong in not finishing it. And what I was going to say was, this is my note for the other day with Lisa and Jeremy and I. She started talking about Renfair, and I said, oh, that thing where everyone has sex with each other. And she said, yeah, it's great. First of all, she didn't get what she said. No, Jeremy and I did. That's funny. But, you know, She has hamsters in her brain and stays up all night counting kratom. Hopefully soon kratom will help with the hamsters and make them disappear. But I dig her, man. She's great. But I wish she could sleep more. So
yeah, she's
so what insomnia. I said, what I, well, isn't that our tagline? Like, you know, insomniac, the Freedom Fiends are a group of weird insomniac, gun-carrying, mellow, peace-loving people who are always up in the middle of the night. That's most the tagline, something like that, most of them, most nights. So the thing that I didn't finish was I said, you know what about Venn diagrams? And if you don't know what a Venn diagram is, you went to public school and learned something. And Lisa said, I know what a Venn diagram is. And I said, Lisa, I'm talking to the audience. There are other people listening. And she's like, oh, yeah. And I said, this is good radio. And then I never explained the Venn diagram about Renfair, which was that I actually saw a discussion on a web forum about 15 years ago, before most people were on the internet, about Renfair, and it was a Venn diagram of the involvement of Renfair people who are also into BDSM, who are also into Linux programming. And it's surprising the number of overlap, the amount of overlap in those three communities.
That's the type of group that you want to podcast to, you know, Narrowcast?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's welcome to the BDSM Renfair and Linux programming radio show. Yeah. All right. So I did it. I can die now on air. Yeah. So
that wasn't a death rattle. Come on.
Yeah, that was kind of anticlimactic. Oh,
so I checked my stats today for the downloads of the Freedom Fiends iPhone app, and 24 people have installed it. Actually, with this is kind of creepy. I don't know if this will creep people out, but it's nothing about my apps. It creeped you out. Yeah, with developers for iPhone and Android apps can not only tell how many people have downloaded the app in all time, you can tell how many people have uninstalled it and how many people are currently running it. That's creepy. It's cool. But there, 20. Go ahead. Over.
There is sort of kind of a way around that, you know. It limits you, but if you root or jailbreak
oh,
your phone...
Oh, come on, man.
Come on. You can install a firewall.
No, I know. I know.
Plenty of people do that, too. So.
I do
that.
Yeah,
but no one...
Maybe.
I know.
Well, there you go.
I'm not saying
it's
a bad thing. I'm just saying it's not a common thing. I mean, it's not like... Put it this way. There are not double digits of phone users doing that.
There's another podcast group...
That's another, yes, the Renfair BDSM Linux programming and iPhone rooting radio show. It's getting more narrow. We're just narrow casting more narrowly. So
how many people did you say downloaded the, you know, the Find a Punk Rock Grave or something? What was that one?
Oh, Find G.T. Allen's Grave? Yeah. I'm over that guy. I've got a better punk rock hero who likes me and says we used to party together and I don't remember it. That's the best.
That
kind
doesn't
of punk
mean
rock
you
hero.
Didn't though.
No, I did. I believe I did. I mean, we were in the same scene. We were in the same on the same label. We played the same clubs. We shared women. We shared the wine. I don't know. Shared the heroin. I don't know. If Sammy says that he partied with me several times before he went to prison, I believe him. He's not a liar, and why would he lie about that? He's not trying to impress me.
No.
I believe it, but I like him a lot better than G.G. Allin. I'm over G.G. Allin, but the G.G. Allin's Grave app, like 20 people have downloaded it, but like 4 people still have it installed.
Well, the others went to the grave. They were able to find it.
I know.
And
they deleted it.
Now, yeah, Michael,
you should market it that way.
If you're a G.G. Allin fan, you use the app to drive to his grave, and then you burn your phone when you get to his grave. That's because punk rockers shouldn't have phones like that.
Now, Michael, you're a punk rocker, and you just made a Grateful Dead reference. I hope
we can share the
women,
we can share the wine.
Yeah.
Hey, man, it's all good. I love the Dead.
Me too.
Before they're cold, they're blueing flesh for
me. I love
to
that
hold.
One too.
Alice Cooper.
Of the Dead.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Alice Cooper said that they were the band that drove a stake through the hippie generation's heart.
School's out for summer.
Really, yeah, and you know what? He was upbeat compared to Black Sabbath. I have a theory that Black Sabbath killed the 60s because the album Black Sabbath came out in like November, I think, of 1969, like the end of 1969.
Yep.
Was it?
Well, it was technically 70, but do you know that whole thing was supposed to be for a radio show? They recorded it in a
and they
radio
put it
studio.
Yeah,
and then
they cost like $300 or something, their first record.
Yeah, it took them 8 hours to record that album, and it cost them $400.
Yeah. That's like Nirvana's first record. I mean, that's, you know, Nirvana's first record cost $600, and with inflation, that's... Well, actually, that's cheaper than Black Sabbath's record. Yeah, in 69. So, yeah, the first record came out, Black Sabbath, the album Black Sabbath. The first song on the first album by Black Sabbath is the song
Black Sabbath
on the album Black Sabbath.
Yep.
By the band Black Sabbath, and it's that boom, boom. It's like the tritone from hell with the bell tolling, and it's like, to me, that was
the death knell
that killed the 60s in a great way. Yeah,
do you know what the Black Sabbath's original band name was?
Earth.
Yes. Have you ever heard the demos?
No, but did you know that Kurt Cobain had a side project named Earth, named after that?
That's cool.
That's really heavy. It's heavier than Black Sabbath. Like, it's slower than the slowest Black Sabbath song and heavier. Go find that. Go find that, people. So, speaking of punk rock, speaking of weird Bay Area, San Francisco music, we were talking about Sammy from Fang earlier, which we do a lot lately. But, you know, I realized
you
the other day... like
apologist.
Stop it. So, I realized other things that Sammy and I have in common. So, like, we were on this two of the same labels, tiny labels that had, like, I think Boner Records had like 8 bands all together on it, and I think that Wingnut Records had like 4. They weren't around for very long, and we were also heroin addicts who are now sober. We what else did we do? Oh, also we both had bands that were favorite bands of Kurt Cobain. So there, although Fang influenced Nirvana, Bomb did not influence Nirvana. So Sammy wins. But the Freedom Fiends iPhone app, it's finally been released. It was like pulling teeth. So I tallied it up. It cost me about $550 to make and get up. I know. And I didn't pay a programmer to do it. It cost me, I programmed. And it cost me $550 to get it to y'all. So far, 24 people are using it. So that's $22.90 each. You owe it to me, people. No, I'm kidding. There's no social contract. And more people will use it. It'll be worth it in the long run. It's already worth it. But I remember seeing the band Primus at a warehouse show in San Francisco. No, in Oakland in probably 1986 or 1987 when they were... They're already like getting popular, but nobody heard of them nationally. They were, I think they had a cassette out, maybe. I don't know. But I saw them at a warehouse show where there were probably 200 people, packed, sweaty, everyone dancing. And between songs, Les Claypool was talking about their mailing list. And he's talking, this is back when a mailing list was you sign up on a clipboard and they mail you something through the U.S. mail, the postal service. And he says, so how many people out there are at the show because of our mailing list? I can't do his voice, but one guy raises his hand. Like, everything else is just word of mouth, but they like were experimenting with, you know, spending money. And he goes, welcome, buddy, you are worth $62.
Oh man,
what year was that?
Oh, sometime between 85 and 89. I have no idea. It's all a blur. Put it this way. If there's people that say they partied with me and I don't remember, how am I going to remember the date of a particular Primus show? Yeah. Good
times. I can remember the date of my first Nine Inch Nails show.
Oh, that's so sweet, you little fanboy.
I am. And you know what? It was so disappointing because there's this new documentary, and he's one of the...
Called Sammy Town. Welcome to Sammy Town.
Yeah.
It's on Google. It's on YouTube. Google it, people. It's and, about Sammy from Fang.
Oh, man. I don't want to like read musicians when they talk about anything other than music anymore. I just can't do it.
Oh, they all think... You know, Nima Vedati and I did a show one time on this Freedom Fiends about 5 years ago that was called People Who Are Experts in Things That Are Wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about, that was a good one. You know, it was about people. God, I can't believe you guys have heard it, but you have because of the random episode link, huh, on the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, that was it.
On the Android app. Yeah.
Right, Android app.
Yep. So, that episode, we talked about people who are like, you know, first of all, like, you know, people with PhDs in economics who know the wrong kind of economics, you know, the, what's it, you guys know?
Keynesian,
yeah. So I saw a video of someone like 5 years ago with a sign protesting that said Obama is a Keynesian, and some Democrat comes up and yells at him, and he's like, no, he's from America, he was born in Hawaii.
You birther trash.
Public high school.
Yeah, I've seen the same, like, that same guy, like, in a picture. They, like, some of those more liberal and progressive pages have memed it and try to claim that you know, this is one of those idiot conservatives who can't spell. It's like, oh, so sad.
Yeah.
The irony of them picking on it.
So you went to see Steve Albini's band Shellac the other day, huh?
I sure did. I went to, it's called the Space Gallery in Portland, Maine.
Speak up, son. You're too quiet.
It's called the Space Gallery in Portland, Maine. And it's like some artsy, fartsy place. But, man, the show was amazing. And, like...
Hey, they still got Gino's Pizza in Portland, Maine. Bomb played at Gino's Pizza in Portland, Maine.
Really?
26 years ago. Yeah.
I'll have to check it out. I'm sure they do.
I'm sure... Well, I don't know. Most places
where punk rock
played back in the day is gone. But my friend, who used to be my heroin dealer in San Francisco, was from Portland, Maine, and he died of something weird. I can't remember what it was, but he was in G.G. Allen's band for a while. Maybe that's what killed him. But no, he died from spinal meningitis.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think he got from sharing needles with G.G. Allen.
Man.
So go on. So you went and saw, you know, the interesting thing about Steve Albini is... He has great bad audio. His guitar sound is so trebly, it like peels the shellac off your teeth.
Yes.
That's why his band's probably called Shellac. But the audio is great. Like, the production of the records is great. The production live, he brings his own sound man. He probably does the sound man check himself because he's an engineer. He's great, you know.
Good well, I think one of the sound supposedly. Check people was a very attractive young black woman that was doing... a lot of the wiring and sound.
Why does she have to be black?
Racist. I don't know, man. She was hot. But
I didn't notice she was black because she was hot. It's all pink on the inside, dude. Oh, my God. Oh, we just lost eight stations.
Good going, man. No, but it's really cool because I was telling you during the break, there aren't very many bands when I go to a show, if I don't know them, that I can jam out to. And sadly, I guess I had never heard this band before. I knew who I'm Steve Albini was.
If anyone's asking. I am. I have the DNA results. I have the documents. So Steve Albini, show me on a doll where his guitar tone touched you.
Everywhere, dude. Like, I'm telling you. I spent the whole night just dancing, and I even started a mosh pit. I was kind of, well... I instigated some things, but it was fun, man.
What?
And the distortion, like you were talking about the bad audio, like the way this guy uses the distortion in his guitar just blew me away.
It's a hate crime.
Oh,
a
man.
A beautiful hate crime. And I just want to stand in the middle of the room and go, I'm soaking it all in. Finally.
That's exactly what I was doing.
Steve Albini. You know, he engineered... We talked about him before, but I'll do a refresher course here. First of all, he's on... DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, bingo, a DVD I did. But he's not in the movie because we filmed him after... He's in the DVD extras because we filmed him after the movie was done, but before the DVD was done. So it's, he says some great stuff. It's you can Google it on YouTube. You know, it is Google. Google owns YouTube. So I'll just say Google it, people. Yeah. You just Google it. Say Steve Albini DIY YouTube, and it'll be, it's got like 60,000 views on YouTube. But it's amazing what he says. It's like 5 minutes long. He's just sitting in a dressing room in the dark with a weird light on him, dropping mad scientists.
And he's really down to earth. Like, you know, he at when the show ends, he was just like,
Is he short or just nerdy?
He looks like nerdy. He's not short.
I remember what Derek J said when we were doing a show about him before. He looked at a picture of him and he said, he looks like Harry Potter after a bender.
Yeah, he kind of does. He kind of does. But, yeah. No, man, he was really cool. Like, he was like, hey, after the show, you know, the show's done, give us a few minutes, and then if you want to come chat with us. And they were all just sitting on the stage, you know, selling shirts or whatever and talking with people. And I got to talk with him for a few minutes, and he's really cool. And I never put it together because I remember you talking about Steve Albini, and one of my favorite artists, Jason Molina, has a song called Steve Albini's Blues. And... We were my friend and I who brought me to the show, we were talking, he's like, so what'd you think of the band? I was like, yeah, they were great. He's like, you know, that's Steve Albini, right? And I was like, nope, had no clue, because I had never heard of this band. And yeah, they were just amazing all around. If you know, get a chance,
he's kind of like me in not wanting people to contact him. You have to like know what you're looking for to contact him. So he's been on the internet so long, he has one of those like noun.com names that we're all gone by like 1996. His website is electrical.com. Stop playing with your mic. Wow. It's electrical.com because Electrical Audio is the name of his studio in Chicago. And if you go to, I haven't looked at electrical.com in a long time. It used to be like his website and his pictures of his studio and all the great equipment and all the great microphones and all the nerd stuff. And he does record on tape still. He's that nerdy about old school kind of, you know, tube amp, pre-amp recording stuff. So if you electrical.com, you go to it now and it rolls over to something called coltsouth.com. Yep, and it's just a web form. It says get in touch. And it's got, you know,
like, I'm not a robot.
Yeah, like basically it's to hire him, you know. And he will record any band. He is constantly working and he doesn't charge a lot and he does great work for a certain kind of audio. But I don't know. It's an acquired taste.
Well, I acquired it the other night, man, I'll tell you.
Yeah. How'd you end up there?
A friend of mine said, hey, there's a show that's really cool band, $12, let's go. And I was like, all right, man. And we showed up, and it was spectacular.
Have a great show, y'all. I'm going to run and go work on BIP stuff.
Burns.
See you, Michael.
You
good night.
You and a hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends, we're back. Woo-hoo. Back from the market, and I'm Randy England, and Chandler and Jeremy are here, and we have a short segment here before the end of this hour. And I think Jeremy may, or Chandler, one of the two, has somewhere to take us for a few minutes.
Oh, I love to take people everywhere. No, a friend of mine, one of those cool Facebook friends that you meet, James Holbrooks, he pointed me to a new site started by Scott Horton, Will Griggs, and I can't remember the other guy's name. I think he's the libertarian chair. Jared LaBelle, anyway, and the site is called thelibertarianinstitute.org, and y'all should check it out, man. There's some good stuff on there. They've only been up for, I think, a little over a week, maybe two. But, yeah, there's some good stuff. They got a lot of great contributing writers and bloggers and very informative, you know, lots of different point of views and kind of keep you up to speed with what's going on in the world, which is a necessary thing, you know. I mean, I posted something earlier today, and I have an older gentleman who's a friend of mine, and he's just like, oh, stop thinking, you know, because I've been posting crazy we're at war stuff all day. And I was like, no, man, sorry, can't do it. Can't stop thinking, because, you know, that's what free people do. And sadly, I don't think a lot of people are doing that right now. So keep thinking.
Yeah. So are they putting up new stuff frequently?
It seems to be, yeah. I mean, I've been trying to check in with it every couple of days, and when I do, there seems to be at least a couple of new articles, you know. They get a lot of people contributing to the website, so there's definitely enough information there to keep you busy. And a lot of it's like, I don't know, there's economics, there's foreign policy, there's, you know, justice, libertarianism, there's people that are, you know, libertarians, but you've also got that kind of anarchist spin to it. I mean, I think a few of those people I mentioned are of the anarchist persuasion, you know? So, hey.
Right. Sheldon Richmond looks like he has his name on the masthead there.
Yep. Bob Higgs, Will Grigg. Yeah, a lot of good
people. Yeah, it sure looks like it's worth a read, and maybe many of them.
Yeah, I hadn't actually heard about it until you sent it along, and I got to check out with those two articles so far, but I added it to my list of websites to start checking regularly, because it's actually, and coincidentally, for some reason, I never realized that Scott Horton's show was, his podcast was actually on, like, you know, I could easily find it on Stitcher.
Oh, yeah.
And I just happened to go looking the other day. I'm like, oh, look at that. And I just started listening to it, and I just heard him talk about it in a recent episode.
Yeah, he doesn't do his podcast per se anymore. He's pretty much focused on just interviews, but
yeah, well, that's
he has
what I meant. That's
really
what I
meant. Hard hitters on that he interviews that are really great. I mean, if you want to know about like what's going on with the Empire and the wars abroad, Scott Horton is your guy, man. He will keep you informed. Like, he just makes my head spin when I listen to him, and I try to keep up, but man,
no, he's essential to get to listen to for you know, as often as possible. I think that Tom Woods has gotten into the habit now of making sure that he gets him on some semi-regular basis.
Oh yeah, well, same with Ernest Hancock, you know, he has him on once a week,
and,
he's becoming a favorite, I think, in the community.
Yeah. Hey, did you see the article about illegal immigrants are going door to door on behalf of Hillary?
And what are they suggesting?
They're suggesting that I guess they go to the door, and in broken English, they ask the person at the door, you know, to vote for Hillary. And I'm thinking, is this some kind of a dirty trick? Because the same thing happened with, I think it was Nixon in 48. And guys, Nixon sent people around who said, we are Russians and we are communists and we want you to vote for Nixon's opponent. And sounds like a dirty trick to me. Maybe Trump put him up to it.
Well, and you know, that's it. I got my best impression of Consuela from Family Guy. No. No, Trump. No. You vote Hillary.
Oh, man.
Well, that's the Freedom Fiends for this hour, guys. We'll be back very soon.
Oh, yes, we will.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza, on the artificial satellite from the Parrot 2017, in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Well, this is the Freedom Fiends, and we are back with this symposium of unsupervised sounds. And we're here to help you wash the government off your hands,
that was
out of
awesome.
Your brain.
That was awesome.
And we have Chandler St-Pierre here and Jeremy Hengler. Did I get that right, folks?
And who else? Who is speaking?
Randy England. Didn't I right. say that already? That's me.
No.
You're the cat that's going to get us all out of jail when the government calls us in.
Boy, I'll sure do the best I can.
You're going to
sure
try.
Do the best I can, yes. Yes, that's right. That's
so
right.
So, we have a remote segment from Michael Dean's I Was Wrong. And this was in the last hour, and he stated that electrical.com was Steve Albini's site. It is actually no longer his site. It's some other guy's, because he looked at his Twitter. Steve Albini's new site is electricalaudio.com, and I just briefly checked it out. It's pretty cool, so check it out, man. He's a cool cat. So, yeah, Michael was wrong, but he took the initiative.
Yeah, and talk about a quick turnaround. Show's not even over yet. He's
already now, you asked me to go to a place, a website called Freedom Cell Network.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we should talk about that some point.
At some point, okay. So you're not ready to go there yet.
Well, I mean, you know, we can certainly go there. I want your expertise on something else before we go there. On since we have a long segment right now.
Okay.
What
are we looking at?
Well, we're going to talk about music licensing for bars and restaurants. Now, I went to this fine little Irish pub that just opened up, pub and restaurant, and it used to be a really dive bar and whatever. Somebody bought it and fixed it up, and it's beautiful. Very, very nice place. Played darts, got some good beer and whatever. So after about an hour and, I don't know, four or five beers, I got tired of hearing the same Irish music. So I walked up to the bartender. I said, "Hey, man, can we play some Slayer? Can we play some Sabbath? You know, something." I said, "Hey, I got my MP3 player in the car." You know, because it was a Sunday afternoon. There was like five people in there, and three of them were me and my friends. And he said, "Yeah, I'd love to, man, but I can't do it." And I said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Man, if I play anything other than this, because like this was like open source, you know, free, he knew the person type thing, music." He said, "If I play anything other than that, you know, I can get fined." And I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And he's like, "No, man, I don't have the license from the government and you know, their enforced monopolies. And, you know, if anyone catches me playing anything that's not licensed, you know, I get fined." So that intrigued me. You know, at first it enraged me. And
well, you know, if there was only like two other people there besides you and your friends, couldn't you have gone up to them and said, like, "Do you work for ASCAP or what, BMI, I think it is, the narc agencies that police that?" And I think the law is that they have to tell you if they are one. Is
Randy,
that right?
Randy,
huh?
I was four or five beers in, man. Rational thought was out the door. But yes, I think you're right. I probably could have done that. But yeah, no, not at that point.
So, but it was still, you mentioned, very disconcerting. You didn't like it.
No, I didn't. So I started looking for this musical licensing nonsense. And I found an article on barbusinessowner.com. And it talks about how businesses, specifically bars and restaurants, have to obtain a license to play copyrighted music. And I guess from what I understand, that includes live music as well. Now, the license can cost anywhere from $500 to $1,500 annually, okay? And if a owner fails to obtain said license, they can be fined anywhere from $700 to $1,500 per song that they play in their establishment. Now, is that not ridiculous?
It's just as ridiculous as it can be. It's anytime you have to have, say, punishments as bad as $750 a song, I mean, what would the royalty have been on that? Well, you said it could be $500 to $1,500 a year. So let's say $100 a month. So like one song couldn't be more than a few cents. And yet they have this absurd, 1,000% markup for the fine that you have to pay if you play one. Yes. See, that alone teaches you that there's something just sick wrong with the whole IP system.
Oh, yeah.
That there's such this disparity between value. It's like throwing somebody in jail for a month for stealing a candy bar.
Do you think that... Well, I'm sure some percentage goes to the artists, but I got to say, would it be like 4 or 5 cents? I mean, it seems utterly absurd to me.
I think these outfits, I used to have to deal with these. When I was in the restaurant business, we always had some music. And when I worked for Long John Silver's, they had custom music made. And that you played this just real long tape, and they never had to mess around with ASCAP or BMI that to collect the money for these things, the extortion. They just played with pirates going, "Arr," and there's a storm a-brewing, and pirate music and stuff like that. But the other place that I worked actually had a service that paid this extortion to ASCAP, BMI, and there's some other organization.
The RIIA is one that's mentioned in there. The Recording Industry Independent Artists Association.
Okay.
Whatever. The one that always sues people for downloading music illegally.
There you go. Okay. Well, anyway, some of these guys, they collect money and they apparently send these narcs around to the restaurants to see. And when when I was in the pizza business, we actually had a service where we paid, 25 or 30 bucks a month or something like that to give us a feed, just a stream of music that played, it was kind of elevatory stuff, I guess. I don't remember exactly whether any of it was any good. That was in part of the deal. And we had a jukebox in the place, and apparently the fees had to be paid on that. But I think that got paid as just paid by the guy that owned the jukebox, something like that. But you always had to do it. And, the question, though, I mean, you're saying you didn't like the fact that, they couldn't play this other stuff, but are you completely against, copyright law, IP? Where would you draw the line there?
See, I'm so torn. I was having this discussion one day. I went to see Derek and Donna Slopey up at their house, our programmer, Derek. I have this soft spot for musicians, right? Like, even though I may or may not have obtained music through illicit means, I tend to support artists that I enjoy. Like, if I find something online and I listen to it and I really dig it, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to go buy that CD or I'm going to go to iTunes or wherever and right. do it. Because, compensation, man. The artists deserve it. And especially in the digital age, I think more money goes to them. So, I'm kind of torn on that. Like, I think that maybe music shouldn't just be given away freely, and you know the artists don't get anything. You know, people say, "Well, hey, it's reputation," and they get known and whatever. But what good is being known if everyone's downloading it for free and not paying the artist? So I have a sticking point there with IP, but in this case, no, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's an establishment, and you're playing like you can turn on the radio. Well. I'm not sure. I don't think you can.
I don't think you can. Unless there are apparently some exceptions if the establishment is small enough. Like I'm thinking a small establishment could turn on just a radio on the wall and listen to the ball game or whatever it is.
Right.
But apparently once you get bigger than a certain room size or something, this kicks in. Yeah. And you have that. Well, you know, the thing is, though, when you're talking about IP law, here I am talking, you know, like ASCAP and BMI, like they're bad guys, they're the narcs, you know. But really, they're just doing their thing that the government has authorized them to do. It's not really
exactly.
It's not really what they have done. They haven't done anything except they're making a buck. In an unfree market, they're using the government to enforce their monopoly. They are using the government to force the monopoly, and supposedly, I think those are non-profit organizations, and they supposedly channel all the money back to the appropriate people, is what I think they say. But the thing is, do you want the government using violence, and they're going to use violence to get the money if they have to? You just want the government, you know, using violence to enforce these copyright laws.
No.
And I'm not sure that there's anything essential about that. You know, for one thing, what has really happened over the last 20 years, you know, starting back with Napster, back in the last century, you know, Napster came out, all the music was free at that point. And there was
That's
a two-prong
into computers.
Yeah, and a two-prong approach was used to attack the loss of revenues due to Napster. One was a huge effort in catching people that were sharing songs, and you read about a lot of big you know, punishments on them. But there was also the other big thing of they changed their whole marketing model, and pretty soon you can start buying this stuff cheap, you know, a buck or less a song, over the internet, and suddenly it was cheap enough that people said, "Hey, I don't feel like I'm being ripped off," and people start paying for it.
Yep,
voluntarily, even though they could find it in other places, and I think that was their answer. And I think that proves that the copyright law is just a corruption and is unnecessary interference with the free market.
Well said.
Speaking of the market,
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American-Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
Sometimes I wish that we recorded the commercial banter because it's so hilarious.
Yeah.
And we'll just leave it at that. Uh-oh.
Definitely some real gems in there.
Yeah. Well, I know Michael and Nima used to do that when it was just strictly podcast, or when they first got on, like, network radio, and there was commercials, they'd edit out the commercials and do the back and forth, but, whatever. there's lots that goes on behind the scenes. What can we say, guys? Yeah. So, in the last hour, Randy was schooling me on IP. Because, you know, I'm torn. You
Which know, is we talked about intellectual property, copyright specifically, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I don't know, man. So, we were talking, and I said, you know, I'm kind of a hypocrite. Because here I am saying, oh, the artists deserve the money. But, you know, some people have been known to go to the Pirate Bay or other torrent sites and just download the music for free. Now, the quandary I find myself in, and I'll give you a classic example. Last year, when Saul Williams released his Burundi single, I was going to go to iTunes and buy it because I was like, you know what, man, I love Saul. He's amazing, and I want to support him. So I'm going to go to iTunes and buy this single. And I spent about 10 minutes trying to log into iTunes because Apple just can't seem to get their stuff together. No, it was not on my end. And I just said, to heck with it. And a friend of mine went to this other site and downloaded and downloaded the song.
Wasn't me. Okay.
No. And truth be told, I actually did get it off iTunes, and it's in M4A format, which I don't particularly like. It's a proprietary Apple format, just like MWV, which is NWA, which is a Microsoft format. But that's neither here nor there. Okay, well, anyway,
I absolve you of your crime then.
Yeah. So I did pay for it. And I actually bought the album twice just because, you know, I love the guy so much. Anyway, so my whole point is, in this technological age, sometimes it is easier to go the pirate route than it is to go the legitimate route. So what's a guy to do, you know?
Well, yeah, what you really wanted was what you wanted when you wanted it, and
exactly.
You were willing to pay for it.
Exactly.
But if you couldn't pay for it, you would pirate it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, see, and you know, that's a well, the thing is, though, I think I was mentioning before the break that you know, so many people now, you look at it, you know, your cheapness or your crookedness or whatever, you know, only extends so far. I mean, you look at something and you really want it and it's 99 cents. You're going, you know, do I really need to commit a crime here, you know, or break the copyright law, even though I have zero respect for copyright law. And that's just me, because I don't think there should be one.
I feel the same way.
You know, and I'm speaking, I mean, well, I gotta say I'm a musician, but I've never sold anything. But I'm a writer. I've, you know, written books, and it would cost me money, I suppose, if I didn't have you know, copyright. But I still think it's wrong. I'd get rid of it in a heartbeat.
So, have you released your books Creative Commons or BIPCOD or whatever?
Well, I couldn't do that. Like the one that I did 3 years ago, which I'm getting ready to revise, called Free is Beautiful. That one, I the only place that a person by themselves without any help can really get a book up that's good and easy and get it on a wide mass market is at Amazon.com.
Yep.
And you have to copyright it, and you have to have digital rights management.
Really?
If you want to do it easily, yeah. And so I put it up there. It had a copyright, and the Kindle version had DRM. Now over there's another place called Smashwords.com that has it's all ebooks. And I went over to Smashwords. I told Amazon they could shove their some kind of special deal if you didn't sell with anybody else. I went over to Smashwords and I uploaded the book over there. It still says it's copyrighted, but there's no DRM at Smashwords. You know,
that's,
I tell anybody
that's
I
really
can't.
Improvement.
Yeah, I
that's
tell
really
anybody.
Good to know, because I have a book that I am, well, I've been saying for a year and a half I'm going to release, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, but I have a book of poetry I want to release, and I thought about going the Kindle route, but I didn't realize you had to copyright it.
Yeah,
I want to give people the option. If they want to pay me, they can. If they don't, I don't care. They can download it for free.
You may not have to copyright it. When I did it, and this is 2012, so I'm not sure. But if you wanted to go through the easy way of using Amazon, I think you had to let them, they had to have the copyright in their name, even though you owned it.
lame.
But lame. To get rid of the copyright was a lot of trouble. And one person might have trouble.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. By sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the road to freedom.
Fiendbot 3000.
Fiend phone.
Bipcot no gov.
Bad audio is a hate crime.
A Freedom Fiends worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
Hey, there's some Squisgar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
Oh, we're back.
Sinful. Scary cat. So, I think before we left to go to the market, we were talking about DRM protection. And once again, you schooled me, Randy. And you told me that has nothing to do with the government. That's all.
Well, wait a minute. Back. What's DRM?
Digital rights management.
And what does it mean?
It means you can't do anything with your media. It sucks. This is why I argue with myself when it comes to IP, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I obtain lots of digital media, legitimately and otherwise, and books and music mainly. I consume. And one of the things that always disturbed me about DRM media was that you couldn't distribute it across multiple platforms without a really big hassle. Because
you know, can only listen to it or read it on the certain platform it came with or came on or something.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, because like I have, I don't know, 17,000 computers in my house and tablets and iPods and MP3 players and this, that, and the other thing. And I like to consolidate in one place and then distribute in another all my media so that it's available across multiple platforms. And with DRM, it's not impossible, but it's much more difficult and much more of a hassle. I don't want that hassle. What I want, and I want it now. And I'm not unwilling to pay for it, okay? But I don't want to deal with all this, you purchased this on this device, so you can just... Well, never mind. And,
I think right before we went on the break, I don't even think I got there yet. I was saying that in my book that's a Kindle version over at Amazon, which has digital rights management, which means you can only read it on a Kindle or Kindle software, and you can't share it around to anybody else. I also have a copy of the same book, same price, at smashwords.com, and it has no digital rights management, so anybody can download it and do anything they want with it.
Are you okay with that?
I'm fine with it. I don't care. I'm more interested in people reading the book than, you know, getting the money for it.
And how many people?
Now, one thing, though, that, you know, we probably should, you know, clarify, digital rights management is not a creature of the government. Digital rights management is what you would, if copyright law disappeared tomorrow, well, that'd be great. But if it totally disappeared tomorrow, then DRM would be what Amazon and all of those were using to save themselves, because DRM is it's an encryption that says you can't read this unless you put the password in.
Further develop and evolve DRM so that, like, I don't have to go through multiple hoops to listen to my song on several different devices.
Well, I don't know. I think they want you. I think what has to happen is what is the decision that I took was that, okay, I put the thing up on Amazon and it's got digital rights management, but I put them over on Smashwords for people that wanted it. Most people still buy my books over at Amazon rather than at Smashwords, even though if they look, they could see that the Smashwords version they could do anything they want with it, including send copies to their friends.
Well, see, and that's like I've found myself in a similar situation where I've bought a selective piece of media legitimately that has DRM and just kind of thrown it into the waste bin of my computer and, you know, used the pirated version to distribute across multiple platforms. So I have absolved myself of any guilt because I've actually paid the artist for that media, but the pirated version is so much better because I don't have to deal with all those hoops.
Well, that sounds like a solution to the problem, doesn't it? Although it seems
it's an extra step that I don't think is should be necessary. But
no, but it respects your respect for that the artist or the author is paid for their work. I think that, you know, people that make, you know, that sell books and music and that, you know, really do have to ask the question, am I going to hassle my customers with this DRM, or should I have it available some other way, like I did? Of course, I had the same price in both places, but I assume maybe you could charge a little more for the non-DRM version. Somebody wanted to be able to use it anywhere they wanted,
That makes sense. Yeah, I remember when Saul Williams and Trent Reznor collaborated on Saul Williams' album, The Inevitable Rise and Fall of Nicky Tardust, which is an excellent album. You all should check it out. But they put it on Saul's website, and they said, hey, here's the album. You can have it in any format you want, MP3, M4A, FLAC, you know, lossless, wave, whatever you want, and you can pay whatever you want. If you want to pay $1 for the album, hey, we'll take it. I actually paid they only allowed up to $7 for the album, so I bought the album twice because I just thought it was that great and they deserved the money. And but I think that's the future, right? So if you're an artist, skip the whole, if you can, skip the whole recording industry and licensing and all that nonsense and put it on your website, right? I mean, I'm an amateur musician. I've composed a few pieces that are, all right, whatever. And if I actually had a website now and I really cared about people, I'd just throw it up on YouTube. That's what I've done. But if I really wanted to sell it, that's the route I'd go. I'd be like, you know, pay what you feel you want. And I think that when you don't have those restrictions and you have that sort of freedom, if people like that stuff and they're into you, they're going to pay it. I mean, you know, even if it's only like $2, you know, you get, you know, 100 downloads, that's, you know, $400 or whatever. I mean,
yeah, you know, the one thing with copyright, of course, that's only half of the equation. You have trademark and patent law, you know, on the other side of it. But it seems like they think that it's really important that the government protect movies, songs, written, you know, books, that sort of thing, and that that people wouldn't do these things or produce these things unless these government protections are built in.
Right.
But it seems like there's, when you look at the scope of things that are protected by copyright law, and then you look at the things that are not protected by it, you realize there's more stuff out there that the exact same logic would cause it to be protected if you were just fair across the board for all people that create things. I mean, you can't get a copyright on a you know, like fashion design stuff like or that.
Recipe?
No, yeah, you can't. You can't do it with recipes. You know, you make you know, the styling of a car is not, because that's a fashion thing. You can't copyright furniture and the way that it looks. You know, all so of this you can't copyright.
It's very selective, and you got to ask yourself why.
Yeah, yeah, it makes you think that maybe who's, you know, pay to play here, you know,
keep
who's
ever
up. You know, yeah, yeah, and Disney, you know, well, why is the copyright for Snow White not run out yet?
Yeah,
and the thing is really insane about the copyright, which now can run so many. Well, isn't many a, decades.
I thought it was 25 years.
Well, no.
Holy smoke.
Hasn't it been increased something every time?
Right, every time it's about to run out.
For Disney. Yeah, isn't that the one that every time yeah, it's about to run out for Disney, that's when they magically increase the time limit for how long the copyright is.
Just keep extending it. You know, even by the logic of wanting.
Star Wars fan films are screwed now that Disney owns them, huh?
It's up to like 80 something years at this point.
Well, it doesn't matter who owns them. Disney gets it extended, but we all supposedly get the benefit or the curse from it of not having these things fall into the public domain when they ought to. You know, it's, you know, if you stopped and think, even if you wanted to respect the logic and had the government protect copyright, how many people would refuse to write a song or make a movie or write a book if copyright was only, say, 3 years long? I mean, nobody. I mean, most of the money is made in that period of time, and people that are creative, they want to create anyway. The only reason that it's longer than, say, 3 years is just because we're victims of a corrupt government who want to, you know, pad people's pockets, who are willing to pad theirs.
Well, and I think it begs the question too, like, you know, as abolitionists and anarchists, we talk about ruling ourselves and defending our own property rights. Shouldn't that apply to the media that we create too? I mean, shouldn't it fall upon us to protect and distribute our media as we see fit? You know, why do we need to have this outside entity called government enforcing through violence and the threat of it makes no sense to me.
Well, you pointed that out. You said that the music industry, you know, they've adapted, you know, a couple of ways first of all, they cut the price. You know, you don't have to buy the whole album. The songs are pretty cheap to buy, and people are not so crooked and so cheap that they won't actually pay money to get their music that way. Now, the revenues are not as high as they were back before this whole thing started, before Napster. But also, the music industry has to morph a bit. Who's to say that recorded music is not just the promo, so they can take in a lot of money with touring live?
Exactly. It used to be that, you know, a concert, you would pay $25 at the most for a show. You'd pay $25 a ticket. And since the business model has evolved, you know, ticket prices have gone through the roof. But that's because, you know, everyone's getting their music on Napster or Torrents or YouTube or whatever. So the artist, and of course by extension the recording companies, don't make their money through record sales as much, so of course the natural extension is that the concert experience is going to be much more expensive.
But they have found a way to protect their intellectual property without using governmental violence. That's the whole point. And you could apply that to just anything else where the government is granting monopolies.
Well, and that's the thing, you know. Well, when we get back, I want to mention something really cool about the monopoly of power and Charlie Chaplin. So, yeah, we'll check that out when we get back from the market.
Worms. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hi, have you heard about BIPCoin? Not Bitcoin, but BIPCoin. Bravo India Papa Coin. Bitcoin is a new cryptocurrency that you can start mining today for free on ordinary computers. Unlike most altcoins, Bitcoin is not a clone of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is based on entirely new, more recent, and better code called CryptoNote. So unlike Bitcoin, Bitcoin has truly untraceable transactions, does not require specialized mining rigs, and has adaptive limits. Plus, Bitcoin is the only cryptocurrency covered by the BIPCOT no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. If you're still kicking yourself in the head for not getting in on the ground floor of Bitcoin, start mining, using, and trading Bitcoin today.
Not a guarantee.
Mining Bitcoin costs you nothing but the electricity to run your computer. And we already take Bitcoin for stickers and buttons. Go to Bitcoin.org. That's Bitcoin.org. Once again, that's Bravo, India, Papa, Coin.org.
We all have lives.
Oh, I actually don't normally.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking I might have to too, Luke. We don't want to leave Lou hanging tomorrow night. Thought about that. All right, so right before we went to the market, I threw out this teaser, and there's this really cool clip. It's from a Charlie Chaplin movie, don't ask me what, but if you go to YouTube and you type in the other great Charlie Chaplin speech, The Tyranny of Authority, it is amazing. It's this young school kid schooling this old cat on, you know, the right to travel and the monopoly of power is the menace of freedom. So go to YouTube and check it out, man. It'll blow your mind.
Yeah, I found it.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, I just found it. It's 3 minutes and 58 seconds long, so it
got me pretty excited earlier in the day.
Well, I'm excited, too. Charlie Chaplin was pretty cool, really.
Yeah. Well, what was the other one? His speech, from the movie The Dictator, which I actually got a copy of not too long ago.
Yeah, that I've seen. And I think I might have seen this other one once before. But yeah, he was quoted multiple times as calling himself an anarchist, didn't he?
Yeah, he was kind of blacklisted from the whole Hollywood scene too. A lot of cats didn't like him because he was different.
Moved to England, right?
Yeah. So, you know, we got a short segment and its whole redemption in the final act and all that. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this hashtag or lack thereof in the social media. And of course, we're not going to see it in the mainstream media, but it's the hashtag no war with Russia. And, you know, well, Americans and the rest of the world are distracting themselves with The Walking Dead and the latest celebrity news and, you know, what Donald Trump said and what the old bag said or whatever. There's a lot of stuff going on right now that, man, it's leading to that whole worldwide war, and we don't want that, you know.
And there's the Russian carrier fleet is on its way into the Mediterranean right now, isn't it?
Yeah. Going down the English Channel or something like that.
It was over the weekend. I think they had the English Channel thing in the news.
Yeah. So we don't want war with Russia, you know. Russia, you know, say what you will about Putin. I don't admire the guy. He's a statist like the rest of them, but he's smart. And he's consolidating, and he's making friends. You know, he's collecting allies that used to be part of the U.S. And I think the end goal is to end the American Empire, which I don't think is a bad idea, but the problem with ending the American Empire is there are a lot of people in the bureaucracies of the American Empire that don't like that, and they will resort to some really, really nasty means to preserve their power. And I think that free-thinking individuals out there really should make their feelings known that war with anyone, particularly with Russia, is a bad idea. So, you know, maybe we start reading stuff and educating ourselves and sharing information with others on social media and whatever platforms you see fit with the hashtag no war with Russia. I think it's really important because
the kicker right now, if you know, if that fleet is headed toward Syria, and who knows if they get there, if their intention is to make a quick end of the Syrian civil war, it could be over before any new president could even get involved. And if Putin had in mind that he'd like this thing to be over before, you know, Hillary gets there or something like that, who knows? I mean, that could happen. Yep. I would love to see it over. I wouldn't love to see how many civilians they're going to kill getting to the end of it. But what can you say? I mean, if we were doing it, you know, we'd be killing plenty of civilians too. So there's no excuse
on either side. No we, man. Most of us individuals are against war. War is bad. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for human life. We want peace. Love your fellow man.
Yeah, man. I'm always against the next war.
Yeah, against the next war. Hell yes. Already.
So screw those politicians, man. They're only out for themselves, man. Love one another.
Yeah. Oh. I think the dogs here agree with you.
And there we go.
That's the Freedom Fiends for tonight, guys. Thank you.
It's been spectacular chatting with you all. I love you all. Have a great night.
Yes. All of you, have a great night.
Worms.